This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Box Trek. I am your host, Matt Brady. Joining me once again, AT, I believe it is now King of Fuzz Style.
Yeah, how about that?
On,
I just
on
keep
Twitter.
Every
time, man, it's like you're like, I think this is it. I think this is it, and then it's like the next episode we do, it's a new Twitter.
But
handle, so.
This has been the longest I've stayed with any of the changes. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens, but yeah.
Yeah, King of Fuzz Style. Adam's getting back into, you know, playing some guitar, stuff like that. That's where that comes
nice,
from.
Nice combo, you know? Of wrestling and music at the same time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, man. But thanks for having me back, Matt, as usual, dude. How you doing?
Hey, man, I'm good. You know, I think I needed a summer break. I think that's what's ultimately going to happen here on Box Trek, is I always need that. I always need kind of a summer break to kind of get the creative juices flowing again. And so I'm good. I'm like, okay, I almost feel like it's going to be like seasonal, you know, as I'm always going to need just kind of like July, August, like kind of off, like to really kind of like, okay, think about what it is I want to redo the stuff. Getting ready to getting pumped, gonna actually be start producing a lot more YouTube content here shortly, so yeah, stay tuned for that. But man, you know, the last time we did an episode, well, we did one about E3, but
yeah,
we had started kind of doing like just picking a system and each picking about 3 games.
Yeah.
We did PS1, we did NES, we did SNES, and now we're going to do DS. Because you and I have both talked about this a little bit, and we both kind of feel the DS, the library is so big.
It's huge. It's absolutely huge.
And there's so many gems. I wouldn't even call this a hidden gems kind of episode. It's just like, because the library itself is almost hidden, because it's just so big. It's hard really to tell. And so
it's kind of like a love letter.
It's more of a like a spotlight.
Yeah.
You know? So we each have a handful of games here. Some of them I think are kind of, you know, you could consider a classic, but we're just talking the DS. So Adam, I'm going to let you go first, because I think I know which game you're going to start with, and yeah, I'm excited to talk.
I'm going to start off with something pretty well known, but there's quite a bit to say about this. And anyone around, you know, mine and Matt's age, you know, you grew up probably playing an N64 at one point, and I'm going to talk about one of the launch titles actually that was for the DS, something pretty popular, a game I think everybody knows. Is Super Mario 64 DS, actually. released November 21st, 2004 in North America. And get this, how about this? We got it before the Japan release, which was in on December 2nd, actually. Like I said, it was a launch title, and as the title implies, this is a remake of the 1996 Super Mario 64. So, you know the story, obviously. It's just, you know, Mario's got to save Peach from Bowser. But there's a couple of more twists on the DS version, and this is all to properly utilize the DS and its functions. And they did a lot of great stuff with this remake. One thing for sure was they updated the graphics. You know, it's completely black and white when you compare, like, two screens, right? If you compare the N64 version to the DS version, obviously. You could clearly see the differences there. And the real big spin on this game, actually, for anyone that hasn't played this, you actually do not start this game as Mario. You start it as Yoshi. Because, guess what? You get to play as more than one character in this game, which kind of dips into and replaces a couple of other functions that the N64 version had, but I'm going to get to that in a little bit. So you start off as Yoshi, and you have to unlock Mario, Luigi, Wario, and I think later on Princess Peach. I've never actually unlocked Peach, though. I've beaten the game. I've never gotten all the stars, because actually in the original Super Mario 64, I think it's 120 power stars, I think, you get. This has 150, actually. There's a couple of more added levels, hidden levels, stuff like that. And, like, I've gotten as many as I have. I've beaten the classic story where it's like you have to fight Bowser three times and stuff like that. But you still have all your classic worlds in the game as well, kind of, like, redone graphically. So you have, you know, Bomb on Battlefield, Big Boo's Haunt, Cool Mountain, Hazy Maze Cave, Lethal Lava Land, Shifting Sandland, which is probably my favorite, Dire Docks, etc., etc. They're all there. But like I said, you have to unlock Mario, and then you can unlock Luigi and Wario, and in doing that, they added extra levels to unlock them. And what was so cool about that was really diving into those levels and see the way they were designed. It's almost like they were always a part of the game. Like, they had a real, like, natural feel. They were done very tastefully with, like, the original game in mind, I think. Have you actually played this one, Matt?
So I have played. Okay, so here's the thing. I'll be perfectly honest. Super Mario 64 in general is, I know so many people, especially in our age group, say it is the best Mario game. It is, you know, it's the first 3D one, and they absolutely love it. I've never really been big on Mario 64.
Oh, wow.
It's usually towards the, so, and I've talked about this before, is my Nintendo 64 story, is I got the 64 so late in its life cycle that I was a PlayStation guy by that time.
I was too.
And so, yeah. And so I missed out on a lot of the big N64 games. And so, like, I just never really played it. And every time I try to play it,
okay,
I just,
fair enough.
I mean, I see it. I totally get why people like it. I've played a little bit of the emulated version of this, the DS version, and so I've seen some of the differences, like you said. Definitely graphically it's a little bit better. I want to say that the aspect ratio is just slightly more zoomed out, just because of the nature kind of the DS.
Whereas,
because it's not a 4:3, it's not necessarily 16:9. I don't know what the exact aspect ratio is on the DS, but it is a little bit more stretched out. But, you know, as you said, you get the different characters, and, you know, I think that's cool. From what I've seen, is a lot of the glitches and things you could do in 64 are still in this game.
I think so. I don't know about too many of the glitches. I kind of just know the typical little tricks you can do to, like, help you in certain levels and stuff like that. But if there's any others that I don't know about, then, I mean, oh well. I know a lot of people try to do a lot of tricks with, like, speed runs and stuff like that and everything. So if it's anything in regards to that, I probably don't know about it because I just don't really speed run any games. But I'm going to go into another feature here, like I said. So it's like you have these other characters in there. So in the original game, you have the different caps you can get. You know, you have your flying cap, your I don't ever remember what it was called, but it helps you, like, go through certain walls and, like, cages and stuff like that. And then you have your metal cap. So basically each character has sort of, like, a different function, and it's, like, each character could only get the specific hat, really. Like, Yoshi, for one, could get a hat that could turn him into one of the other characters if you're playing as Yoshi, to give them that ability. But Mario gets the flying cap, Luigi gets the cap that lets you phase through walls and stuff like that, and Wario gets the metal cap, actually. So depending on what level you're going to and what kind of power star you're getting, it kind of really forces you at this point. It's not like how in 64 you just dive in as Mario and get the hat you need and then just plow through the level. Sometimes you might go in with a different character and think, oh, I got to get out of this and go back in as this character and stuff like that. So that's cool. It kind of adds a different feel to the whole game. And like I said, I never got Peach, so I don't really know what she's all about in this game. There's also added mini games, but to be honest, I looked at the list.
I don't know if Peach is playable.
Okay.
I'm looking. I'm looking at some of the changes. I don't believe she is.
Okay. All right. I guess I might have just always looked at that wrong, and that's probably just why.
Maybe she is.
Her.
Maybe she is. Maybe she is. I'm not 100% sure because I'm not as familiar with this game. Just from what I'm reading.
There are a lot of mini games though, and it was just I never really played them. Because there's just so many, so I really couldn't tell you really about them. But you know, it's something cool to do to keep replayability value in the game. There's other multiplayer aspects of the game you can do as well, which, you know, I never really tried the multiplayer function on this game at all, so I don't know what that's all about, too. I don't know if that coincides with the mini games, or if you can play, like, certain levels with each other to get power stars, but all in all, it was a solid port, and it's a great way to introduce a new generation at the time to Super Mario 64, and it was just an awesome showcase to show what the DS was ready to do. And it's kind of like in a sense, like with the Game Boy Advance or the Game Boy Advance SP, where it's essentially you took a Super Nintendo and shoved it into this little handheld. You kind of took an N64, but then some, and I'm going to get into a little bit of that later on, and you stuck it into essentially what the DS was. So
absolutely.
It was just phenomenal. And for me, I loved this because once I got Wario unlocked, I did nothing but play as Wario. Like, I did not, like, care because just Wario was always my favorite Mario character, and to play as him in a more 3D-based game, yeah, I had a lot of fun with that. But yeah, it's same game, new skin, just, that's it.
And it's, like, everything is upgraded. I'm looking at all the differences here, and it's literally, it's like, they talk about every character has an updated graphic. Princess Peach says wears her hair up in her appearances instead of wearing her hair down as she did in the original game, which is based on how she now appeared in Super Mario Sunshine, which, you know, kind of gives her that ponytail. So it's just really cool when you really start looking at a lot of the, you know, just a lot of the differences and what they put into this game. And if you want to play Super Mario 64 on the go, this is the best way to do it, which for a lot of people, I think, was the selling point. I think it's the same reason a lot of people were so pleased when they did essentially the same thing with the 3DS. They said, let's take a classic game and give it a remake. And they just, you know, they chose Ocarina of Time, another 64 game. And then they actually, you know, then they've done Majora's Mask and They did Star Fox 64 on the 3DS as well. So, a handful of Nintendo 64 games that have been remade for your, you know, you can play portably. Now, if we can just get them on the Switch, you know, we'll be set to go.
Yeah, it's still a game every now and then. I still pop it in to this day because it's just classic.
And that's the best thing. That's the best thing about Mario games is that you can always, go back to them. You can always go back to them and play no matter what.
That's it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what I want to talk about is essentially another kind of remake, if you will, or enhanced version. It's a game we talked about a little bit before, and that is the entire reason I bought a 3DS. So I know we're talking DS, but it's really the reason. It's really one of the games I bought a 3DS for.
Right.
So I really kind of missed the DS. My brother had one. I didn't really play a lot of DS when it was out. I kind of got into it when the 3DS XL was coming out. I was like, you know, I know that the 3DS can play DS games. I want to go back and I want to play all these games I've missed. And one of the biggest games I wanted to play was I really wanted to get into Pokemon. And so this is around the time that Pokemon Black and White were coming out. But I decided, I was like, no, I need to go further back. And I got I bought a 3DS, like the base model. And I bought Pokemon Soul Silver.
Yeah.
So I still will contend that if you really want to talk about what generation of Pokemon is the best, I'd still have to say, I mean, the originals are great, but you got to look at Gold, Silver, and Crystal, because
agreed, 100%.
You get two regions. You get two regions. And having played, I think that Soul Silver is much easier to go back to than regular Silver. I've been trying to replay Silver or Gold, you know, because you can get them on the 3DS, like just the original versions of those.
Right.
And, you know, it's a lot of the starting area in Gold and Silver, that generation, is kind of confusing. For whatever reason, when I go back and play it, I'm just like, this is kind of confusing. And I think that Soul Silver, just aesthetically, because it just looks so much better, I've always just found it easier to navigate. And I know this sounds like nitpicking some random obscure thing that no one cares about, but for whatever reason, I with Gold and Silver, recently I've gone back and tried to play it, I'm like, where the heck am I supposed to go? You know, because it's kind of confusing. But so besides that, with the graphic updates that you get in Gold and Silver, they expand on it a lot more. There's just the compatibility with being able to trade with all of the other DS games. And so it really opens up the Pokemon library. You know, this is before the Pokemon Bank.
Right.
You know, so it's one of the things I've always loved about Pokemon is you're able to, you know, carry over your Pokemon from, you know, forever. You can just keep carrying them on and on in games. And my buddy Justin, who I've talked about before in the show, he's a big Pokemon guy. We had always drawn up like the roadmap of how you'd have to like carry across Pokemon. Okay, well, like, well, this game, you know, you can transfer to these, and this game, then you know, and it's just funny. And so, have you played Heart Gold and Soul Silver?
No, I only played the originals, actually. And I've always like told myself, you got to play those because Gold and Silver are my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so one of the cool things that Heart Gold and Soul Silver add is it's like, besides Yellow, it's the first game where the Pokemon would follow you.
Yes.
They'd follow you around. And you can like turn around, see how they're doing. They added some mini games as well.
Oh.
There was, yeah. It's like Voltorb Flip, I think it is. It's in the Japanese version. It's like a slot machine, and there's just, you know, some other Pokathlon. It's like they do like hurdles or whatever. You know, it's almost like Pokemon Olympics, but Heart Gold, Soul Silver, just like Fire Red and leaf green, you know, they add like kind of another area at the end, right, you can kind of go, you can go to. It just makes it feel like, okay, once you've beaten the Pokemon League, or and now I have that other challenge, that infinitely more difficult challenge to go on to. And it's the best way to play, you know, the best Pokemon game.
Now, isn't the function with your Pokemon following you, isn't it based on whoever's first in your party?
Mm-hmm.
So that's incredible how they reworked. At this point, we had this coincides with the fourth gen, so like Diamond, mm-hmm. Pearl, Platinum. So
yep.
They reworked all of those Pokemon to make these sprites specifically, mm-hmm. for this game, and I just thought that was incredible. And the really cool thing was the Pokewalker thing you could get with it too. I think it came with like a little Pokeball like, mm-hmm. thing you could stick on your belt, but you could transfer a Pokemon into it, and per step you walk in real life, it's an experience point. And I think they could pick up like items. I mm-hmm. think so. So I always thought that was pretty cool too. But yeah, I'm with you on this one, Matt. It's like, you know, we grew up OG with Pokemon. You know, Red, Blue, Yellow. But that's mm-hmm. that is classic. But there's just something about Gold and Silver that just blow it out of the water. It became so much more mythical too, I think.
Well, it's because it's because Gold and Silver are like a sequel, right? Where you went back and they introduced all these new Pokemon, but you could still go get the old mm-hmm. ones. And so rather than what a lot of the other games do is where they have, okay, here's some new ones, here's some of the old ones. It lets you just be like, oh, well, you know, like I could still use Charizard, or I could use, oh god, now I'm blanking on what the it's not Blaziken.
Typhlosion.
Yeah. Yeah, Typhlosion.
And I love Typhlosion, you know, actually. It's so mm-hmm. great.
I was a Fralligator guy.
Oh,
so,
me too. Yeah, but I think when it comes to fire starters, actually, I think my favorite actually is Typhlosion though, over Charizard. I think I would say that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. You just can't go wrong.
No, you can't go wrong. I think I found it in the wild for like $20.
That's a steal. You know, for that game?
Yeah.
People want arm still, the leg like, for that one, dude.
Heart Gold, Soul Silver, people definitely want a as you said, an arm and a leg for. So, you know, I mean, heck, if you can't, I would just emulate it is the easiest way to do it. I'm a big proponent of emulation. I know you're, you know, whether it's legal or not or whatever, but I'm certainly a big proponent of it. I mean, you can't go wrong, honestly, with just any of the main series Pokemon games. What I'm wondering, though, what I'm really wondering is this year we're getting a brand new Pokemon game,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
I'm wondering if next year we're going to get the follow-up to Let's Go, Eevee and Pikachu,
Ooh.
And we get Let's Go, and it's silver and gold.
Interesting. I like that. Well, that I would probably have to get too, then. I mean...
Right.
Oh, my God. There's just too much stuff. Oh, my God.
I know. So that's my thing, because, you know, red and blue/green have been, you could almost argue they've been remade like three times, because, you know, yellow came out and it wasn't necessarily a remake, but it was certainly after red and blue, and they made it more about the anime and they added some stuff, and it was like, okay, so it wasn't really a remake, more of like an enhanced version, but it did have like different sprites. A lot of the sprites were different.
And actually, get this, that is the second time the sprites were reworked, because originally when Red and Green came out in Japan, I think in 96, 97, mm-hmm. before it came out in America as Red and Blue, the sprites were even different then. So when they were going mm-hmm. to re-release in the United States, they redid the sprites for Red and Blue, actually. So you could find those older sprites, actually, on Bulbapedia. It's all there. And you can mm-hmm. see how they redid them, and then they redid it again, like you said, for yellow. And they looked a lot mm-hmm. more true to the anime and the cards, all that stuff. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we had Fire Red, Leaf Green, and then we get Pokemon Let's Go. So it means it's been remade. So this may be the next that next one, and I'm hoping so. I hope so. Now if that one gets remade, because I didn't pick up Let's Go, because I'm just waiting for the what is now Sword and Shield.
Yeah, it's like I played enough Red and Blue in my lifetime as well to know it's like I don't need to replay this again. But
right, yeah. If I do, I'll just replay the Red or Blue. I mean, you know, that's it. It's like,
but I'll do Gold and Silver again though, because that's my favorite. Like I said, so
absolutely,
yeah.
So, all right, well, Adam, I'll toss it back to you.
All right, so, one of the first episodes I ever got to do with Matt on the show talked a lot of Resident Evil, and well, how about that? We're gonna dive into a Resident Evil game on the Nintendo DS, and that is Resident Evil Deadly Silence. And for those of you wondering, guess what? This actually is once again a port of the original first Resident Evil on the PlayStation. And I wanted to state before, like again, as a testament to what the DS can do, this thing was now playing a PlayStation game on it.
Yeah.
Like, how about that? And it's just, it was so incredible to see, because I wondered how were they going to do this. I didn't know if anything was going to be dumbed down, but this was released in February of 2006 to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the original game. But it's just so crazy how they did that with a PS1 game, but it makes sense because this is at the time when Capcom was doing a lot of stuff with Nintendo, like Resident Evil 4 was coming out. They did the remake of the first game, totally redone with new graphics, and Zero had come out. I think Zero came out maybe 3 years prior, I think, to this as well.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, so it's insane because this, not only did it still retain the original PS1 graphics perfectly, mind you, it still had the original voiceovers and the original full motion video cutscenes, like the black and white movie that with actual actors in the original PS1 game. And it, because think about this, because like when we had N64, you couldn't work full motion video cutscenes into the cartridge.
Not really.
Which is, yeah, you know, that's why Final Fantasy VII was put out on the PS1. That's why, you know, Resident Evil came out the way it did on, you know, the PS1. I mean, they originally scrapped Resident Evil Zero on the N64, actually. Mm. It was originally supposed to come out for that. And you could still see the footage for it, all the test footage, because they just didn't know how to master it on a cartridge yet. So That was enough to blow me away. But for anyone that does not know, you know, the original plot to Resident Evil, you have the choice to play as Chris Redfield or Jill Valentine, members of STARS, that's the Special Tactics and Rescue Squad, part of the RPD, Raccoon Police Department. You're part of Alpha Team, and you go search for Bravo Team, who got lost in the Arklay Mountains, trying to investigate a couple of grisly murders, but both teams discover that monsters and zombies are behind all of these deaths. You take refuge in the mansion, a nice, wild, modern take on the haunted house, if you ask me, personally, and you discover the nightmare continues, and obviously you have to figure out how this all came to be. It pretty much retains its tanky controls and the menu layout, but we did actually get one slight change in the controls. Resident Evil 3 introduced, that's Nemesis on the PS1, that introduced a 180-degree turn you can do to kind of help you turn around and get away from enemies faster. So we got that. This also, however, adds something called Rebirth Mode. So you could play the classic version of it, and then you could do Rebirth Mode. So it's the same story and everything. However, this was tailored to more suit the DS functions, actually. So there will be certain areas that you get to in the game that will require you to go into a first-person mode and use your knife or other weapons to take out enemies, actually. And there's actually more added enemies in Rebirth Mode. And we also got a multiplayer mode. What I always loved about the Resident Evil games is you get like the unlockable games like Battle Mode or Mercenary Mode and stuff like that. And that's kind of what the multiplayer was trying to do with it as a LAN feature. I don't know if you kids listening know what LAN was, but that's when you connected kind of like you did an online connection, but everyone had to be in like the same, like, I guess, home, like connected to the same internet connection, actually. And it's all 2 to 4 players. There are 2 modes added to this. You have co-op, where you and other players help one another solve puzzles inside the mansion and help each other escape. Also, there's competitive mode, where you face off, again, 2 to 4 players, and your job is to see who could get the highest score, and you get your score by killing enemies, and the tougher the enemy, the more points you get, basically. And what was really cool about this was you could play as Chris or Jill, but also it allowed you to play as other STARS members that were featured in Resident Evil 1 and some that were even shown once again in Resident Evil 0. So you could play as Chris, Jill, you could play as Barry Burton, Wesker, Forrest Spire, Enrico, Rebecca Chambers, Kenneth, who is actually in Resident Evil 1 when you run into your first zombie in the hallway eating the body. That's Kenneth, actually. So you could play as Kenneth. And Richard, who... Richard is the character that is killed later on by the giant snake in the mansion. So I thought that was pretty cool. You have 3 levels to choose from. You could play in the mansion. The guardhouse, which is outside where you fight the giant plant. And the Umbrella Laboratory. Yeah, so I really liked that that new spin on it. I didn't play much of Rebirth mode. I was kind of just, like I said, I was blown away enough by the fact that we got to play the original as it was on the PS1, but they finally were able to, like, we could do full motion video on a cartridge now at this point. Because remember, before the DS, we had the GameCube, and the GameCube was by that point disc technology, so it was easier for them, obviously, on a disc to do full motion video and stuff like that for cutscenes. But to finally get it on the cartridge was something.
Okay, so quick question. Yes. Here. Okay, so there is. I'm trying to think of how many different versions of the original Resident Evil there are now, because I think you can make an argument there's a ton. So
yes, actually there's 2 alone on the PlayStation.
Right. There is the PlayStation and Saturn version.
There is a Saturn version, that's correct.
There's a Windows version, like an old like 96 Windows version of the original game, like Resident Evil, right?
Before it was Director's Cut.
Yeah, then there's Resident Evil Director's Cut, right? Which is the same game, but what is the difference in that?
I gotta be honest, I don't know, because I've only played Director's Cut, actually.
Oh, gotcha.
I never played the original Resident Evil as it was. Like, once 2 came out, like, Director's Cut was already out, and, like, so I was only able to get my hand on Director's Cut, actually. So, yeah, okay. I never played the
original. So then there is Resident Evil Gaiden, isn't that?
That's
like
Game Boy Color.
Game Boy Color, but
it's not canon, though, actually.
Okay. So then there is the GameCube remake of the original game. Then technically you could argue there is an enhanced version of that, which is the HD versions.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That are on Steam, like PS4. I think it's on PS3, you know. It's now on Switch. Okay. And then there's this, which is basically the DS version of the original port of the original game.
Yeah.
So there are an insane amount of ways to play. I thought there were. What's the
one on the Wii? It was like a rail shooter version,
right?
I think. What was that called again?
Dark Side Chronicles or Umbrella Chronicles?
Oh, it was Umbrella Chronicles. One of those. Dark Side was
one
the
of those.
Second one.
Yeah, Umbrella Chronicles. Yeah, you can play it
that's
way
it.
Too.
Yeah,
but I thought there was a first person shooter version of it that was. Isn't that? No,
well,
I'm thinking
think,
of Dead Aim.
I think. Well, yeah, Dead Aim is his own game in general, where it's not entirely first person. It's just first person when you use your weapons. But then there's Resident Evil Survivor on the PS1 and Dreamcast, which, again, it's not a remake or anything, but that's all in first person.
Got you. Yeah. See, this is why I love having Adam on, because the Resident Evil series is almost like the Mega Man series at this point, where there's so many games and there's so many different versions, and I'm like,
I spent a lot of time on on my Resident Evil. Yeah, it was
which is great. Hey, it's great. That's okay. So yeah, this is the best portable way to play the original version, except for now you can play the remake. This is the only portable way to play the original version.
Right.
Well, unless you can play the original version on the PSP/PS Vita.
Oh, yeah, through their PlayStation Store, I think, right?
The PlayStation Store, yeah. But this way is infinitely easier. You just pop in the cartridge.
That's it. Yeah, and there's even still, like, the door animations, too, and everything, and all the sound effects that come with it. Like, it doesn't miss a beat, man. It doesn't. The only thing I will say, though, and this isn't me giving it any crap or anything like that. Like, I'm not trying to nitpick here either. But, you know, this was, like, really their first hand at this, you know. The DS was still fairly new. It had only been out for not even 2 years yet. There's a part of the game where you get into the Umbrella Lab, and there's a flooded area, and that's where you fight the giant shark and everything. The frames do slightly drop when you're running in the water, but it's not enough to make it not enjoyable. But you can, if you look at it carefully, you can see it. But still, hey, I still have my Deadly Silence stacked up.
Hey,
right,
I remember the the shark part's where I always use like the little gun, the Derringer. I use it on the big shark. I think it's funny.
Oh yeah, yeah. That was one of the emergency weapons they gave you in the remake, I think. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Cool. All right, man. Resident Evil. Hey, you can play Resident Evil on the DS. I mean, what more do you want for the freaking DS?
Yeah, one of the few M-rated games on the Nintendo DS, actually.
Yeah. Okay, well, hey, I'm going to talk about a game. This one you could almost define as a hidden gem. I can't remember if I've talked about this on the show before or not. I went back and I was trying to make sure I really hadn't. But it is a game called Spectral Force Genesis. Now, when I bought this game, like 5 years ago, it was on Amazon for like $8. I'm pretty sure you can still find it in the wild for incredibly cheap. How do I describe this game? It is, in a sense, a kind of turn-based strategy game. Think about it more kind of like Risk, however.
Yes.
And then it has a little bit of RTS kind of battles. So it takes place in like this, you know, kind of fiction. The game is not really that deep. In a way it kind of is, but in a way it's not. It's it looks like an RPG, but it's not. It really is like a budget title is like the way I kind of need to describe this. To actually tell you the story, the way the game works is you have about 40 different kingdoms, and each kingdom has its own character. And so what you need to do is you have to systematically take over the entire map. And you do that essentially through battling. And, you have like a calendar year, and every month you do something different. Like one month you're raising taxes. The next month you are engaging in battles. The next month you are engaging in strategy. You know, you could form alliances. You can try and steal other countries' generals. And the story is told through you through like little cutscenes that happen in every character's kind of arc as you play through. But triggering those cutscenes are kind of random. And like each campaign, I could say takes roughly like 10 hours.
Ooh.
So I've yet to find any guide or anything on the internet. And I myself have never done this over the 5 years I've played through every character's story to be able to tell you exactly what like the full, you know, like story is. Like it would take like an insane amount of hours to beat this game with every character. But it's definitely something that like I played a lot on like lunch breaks at work. Because you can just kind of like, oh, I'll just play a couple turns or whatever, and kind of build your conquest. You have to, you have to trade, you have to buy stuff, and you got to like, keep your troops' morale high. And there is kind of this like risk reward system where the more territories you gain, it's essentially, I think about it like a factory. Okay, well, now if you gain another country, I gain access to that country's resources as they're growing. And stuff like that. But you have like your troops, and then you have like walls, right? So like you get to build up your wall, and that's basically your country's defense. And so if you take over a country, your country is then undefended until you get to a month where you can build, and so you can build walls, and if you lose that battle, you just lost that country and all of your troops. So really, it's like best to kind of like bide your time, wait and see. Okay, this month is battle. This month is, because it's random. Every year is random. And so you're just kind of like waiting and waiting. And sometimes you'll go through like a year or two until you're like, okay, this is the opportune time to like attack this country, attack this. You can like sit and kind of wait for other countries to kind of eat each other alive. And then like that's then you like this. Now this like country is bigger because they have more territory, and like the small ones get weeded out. And the map works really well because like some countries already start out with like four or five territories when they start, but maybe they'll have less troops. And then other countries start out, but like they're in the middle of a bunch of other smaller countries. And so it's kind of easy to take over territories. But if you mess up on like your first year or two, then you can get like, destroyed by all of these other countries around you. So it's definitely like an interesting game. It's got a very big anime art style to it. It has completely mixed reviews across the internet.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Just completely mixed reviews. Like, some people, like I'm reading one here on Metacritic, Spectral Forces Genesis is a really disappointing game overall. And while I found myself oddly enthralled with clicking through menus, the end result is that I spent a lot of time not really doing anything at all. And that is definitely true. It definitely is a game that requires, some patience. And then some people who praise the game, they say, it's a very complex strategy. There's a bunch of goals, but it definitely requires dedication. I think it looks good, and it's really satisfying when you take over that next country and build your empire. So if you can find it for dirt cheap, which I'll pull it up on Amazon here, I'm sure you could still. I bought it like brand new like 5 years ago.
Nice.
Spectral Forces Genesis on Amazon. Okay, now it's like $16. When I bought it, it was like $7. But hey, I mean, you can buy it used for $8. So
yeah, that's still not bad. But yeah, mm-hmm. But yeah, like I was looking at this and I liked the whole anime isometric view style. I thought that was mm-hmm. very, very charming. But yeah, from looking at it, like I thought, oh yeah, like this is like Risk. I kind of thought to myself, but mm-hmm. I didn't know how much deeper it went, like you were telling me about like taxes and like kind of like how you go through mm-hmm. like each month and stuff like that. So that seems really, really cool. That's different.
And it's addicting. It's definitely an addicting game because it's kind of that instant gratification thing. We're like, oh sweet, I just improved. Oh sweet, I just improved. Oh sweet, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just improved. And then you're like, wow, I just played that game for 8 hours. Yeah, and so it's definitely got that going on it. So
yeah, it has a very charming quality about it, I think. And despite reading the mixed reviews, yeah, it's something I think I would like to give a shot myself. I like that concept of like building a wall and upping your defenses and stuff like mm-hmm. that. It seems to have like a mix of like. Like you said, it's like tactical. There's real time strategy with that sense of like you're powering up your defenses. That it's kind of like a tower defense thing as well. It almost seems like, but all while just like expanding on like what Risk was. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, Spectral Forces Genesis. If you can find it dirt cheap, I'd say grab it, especially if you're somebody who likes tactical RPGs and there are, or just, you know, strategy games, as there are a bunch on the DS. Like if you're a collector, I mean, there's certainly better tactical, you know, or strategy games for the DS. Obviously, Front Mission, the remake of Front Mission, which is a game I'd, you know, love to dive into at some point. The Fire Emblem games. I think Final Fantasy Tactics, what is it, A2 is the one that's on the DS. So
I think that's it.
Yeah, but I mean, certainly it's a gaming. I'm sure you've probably played, you haven't played something like it. So check it out.
All right.
Okay, Adam. So I think your last game.
My last game here. Now, here we go. I've had a long history of looking at this franchise, but it was this game that finally made me pull the trigger on it. And that is a Shin Megami Tensei game, actually, released kind of late in the DS's life cycle, released in 2009. It's Shin Megami Tensei Strange Journey. This is a standalone game from the other there's a lot of different series in the Shin Megami franchise, and I'll get into that a little later. So like I said, 2009, it's a JRPG featuring the likes of demons and other deity varieties, basically. I'm just going to give a little input. Well, not input, but I'm going to dive in a little bit into what our story is. I'm going to give the abridged version. In a nutshell, we are you are part of a task force in a distant future in our world, and we are sent to Antarctica by the United Nations. An unknown anomaly that has been dubbed as... This makes me laugh every time I say it, because I don't know who decided to call it this. It's called the Schwarzwelts. It's appeared, and it's consuming the region. Have you ever watched Annihilation or read the book? The movie had, like, Natalie Portman in it, but there's, like, that. There's like this...
I know the movie you're talking about, but no, I did not see it.
Yeah, so it's kind of like that, where, like, this thing is, like, encompassing, like, southern... United States, but like within is a whole different world, basically. So upon entering the Schwarzwelts, when your team gets down to Antarctica, you find it's kind of like a warped parallel universe in a sense, and it's run by demons and creatures of folklore ranging from Christianity, Norse mythology, Egyptian, Japanese even, and there's just many, many, many others. It was very thoroughly thought out here. It plays like any other turn-based JRPG, but it's also, in the battle system, it's got something what you would call a co-op aid system, I guess. And that's kind of like where the real meat and potatoes comes into here. So in your party, you basically, this is kind of like a Pokemon-esque or any kind of like game where you catch monsters and use them as a team, you recruit demons and other monsters into your party. But you do this through like a certain variety of means. Like you can just battle them and just kill them, but you don't get them that way. You have to get them by actually talking to them, which there's an option to use in your battle menu. And you can sweet talk them, you can bribe them, you can pay them. It all depends on their alignment, basically. Alignments include stuff like dark, light, and neutral, and it goes even further. You have like dark law, neutral law, dark chaotic, light law, neutral chaos. That's like to name a few, basically. And you know, if you're kind of like, your character's kind of like on the light side, basically, so it's really hard to get like darker characters. But if you like work well enough and like kind of figure out how you should be talking to like these demons and stuff like that, you could get them on your team, basically. I think on my team right now I have like a dark chaotic character, I have a neutral character, and I have a light law character, basically. But now if some of your demons in your team have the same alignment, they do kind of like this chain attack together after each one's done their respected attack. So it adds an extra turn in combat to help aid you. So it's good to have demons in your party that have similar alignments, basically. So I thought that was a cool feature to add to a very basic JRPG system. It's Strange Journey in the Shin Megami Tensei series, it's kind of like one of those games like Final Fantasy or Dragon Quest where it's like some games share the same stories and others are standalone, but they all have similar game mechanics. And in this case, in Shin Megami Tensei, the reoccurring theme is the demons, basically. Demons are pretty much in a most part in every Shin Megami game. I think the only series that's really different, I never really played any of these games, but the Persona games. I think you like fight demons, but it's like your party is basically just all the characters like you meet in like whatever school you're going to and stuff like that and everything. Not that's important, but it's like one of the most familiar mascots in the Shin Megami series is what you'd call Jack Frost. He's kind of like this cute little like humanoid snowman like little guy. He wears like a little crown. So like a lot of people have probably seen Jack Frost, but probably just didn't know what series he's from. But that's where he comes from, though. The game kind of runs in a first-person dungeon crawler aspect as well. How you encounter demons is almost time-based. It's like as you begin a new like battle or encounter enemies, it's like it happens every few paces, and it's kind of signaled by like a light that kind of like works as a radar. It starts out blue, which means you're kind of like safe, but as you keep going, it turns yellow to signify caution, and then when it turns red, it means a battle's about to take place like at any time. Basically, there's kind of no way out of that, so you kind of like always have to make sure you like your team is like up to speed and like ready to go here. Basically, there's a lot of crude humor and adult themes in this game. Like, one area you reach, like, the game is split up into certain levels, basically, and you just have to complete certain objectives in each dungeon to get to the next level. And the second level in this game, it's all pretty lengthy. It took me, like, 12 hours to get to the third level, which is kind of like where I left off on, which I kind of forget what it was because I've never finished this game actually, but I definitely plan on sinking back a lot more time into it. But the second level is a brothel and like drug den that's like run by like the demons, and like there's other people in the task force that you run into that are kind of like going crazy, and they're like kind of like falling to like temptation, which is odd because it's, again, it's all demons and stuff like that and everything. So I thought, again, it's another one of the few M-rated games on Switch, actually. Your character, as far, you know, you're a human, you have a melee attack, so you could get stuff like knives or like, I think you could get like swords and stuff like that, and you have firearms, and you could get just unlock different firearms as you progress through the game and stuff like that. And your demons have a physical attack based on their alignment, and they have spells too based on what kind of like creature they are too. A 3DS port was also released about a year or two ago. And it basically adds, I think, more cutscenes, and it has added dungeons as well, actually, I think, to help utilize the 3DS aspects of the system. I haven't played it. I still have the original DS version. But yeah, I've probably plugged into it, like I said, a total about 12 hours into this game. And I think I'm just going to like restart it and just kind of like really take the time to like just plow through this thing. I've always been interested in the Shin Megami Tensei series. There's a lot of other Shin Megami games on the DS, even on the 3DS. Other games that like sparked my interest here was the original Shin Megami Tensei series. You have a Digidevil Saga as well. Like I said, despite I haven't finished it, it's solid, and it's really, really dark and different, I think. And if you're kind of like looking for a kind of like more mature like theme on like monster catching games like Pokemon or Dragon Quest monsters for that matter and stuff like that, I think this is a solid way to go. This title, it's pretty interesting.
Is this, so does this game have, does it tie into any of the other,
no, this one's completely a standalone.
Okay, so is the Shin Megami, so like the Persona series is like kind of loosely tied together from what I
the Persona can series is
kind of gathered, and then the Shin Megami Tensei series is almost like Final Fantasy where there are their own stories.
In a sense, yeah. Like some games. Whoop, hang on. I lost my my mic for a minute.
It's all good.
I know. So basically, some games are directly connected to each other. Like, I think games like Shin Megami Tensei Devil Summoner, that has a sequel or two, I believe. Shin Megami Tensei 4, where I think a lot of the games in the original Shin Megami series are kind of more anthology-based, but Shin Megami Tensei 4 has a side game called sequel. Apocalypse.
Apocalypse.
Right. So those games tie into each other as well, yeah. Actually. I think the Digidevil Saga, I forget how many games are in that, but that's its own series. But again, it shares all those qualities of, like, it shares the same kind of demons and everything and stuff like that. Kind of gotcha. Like how any Final Fantasy game will share monsters and stuff like that, or like the chocobos and everything.
Right.
So yeah, it's just a real dark, apocalyptic... I don't know if satanic is even stretching it, because you find some really crazy stuff in these games. You have this thing called the Demon Summoner Program, too, and through that, you can combine demons to make other demons. And, like, you bring up, like, this little computer screen, and there's, like, a pentagram on it. It's really, really, like interesting stuff. Don't let that stuff reflect my own spiritual beliefs, by the way. I just think the game's cool. That's it, really. But yeah, strange journey. I thought, you know, let me lean away from a remake here and go with something original that was put out specifically for the DS. And it uses the dual screen function as well, because the bottom screen maps out the areas you're in too. So that's cool. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have your map like on hand and ready to go and everything. So that's cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Hey, man. Well, last game we're going to be talking about here is a game I bought. I've never really played a lot of the Mana series. I played some of Secret of Mana. I know the one for the PlayStation. What is it? Legend of Mana is a lot of people love. But this is Children of Mana. It came out in 2006. It's essentially it's a dungeon crawler, really is the easiest kind of way, but it's a it plays just like a lot of the other Mana games. You know, that kind of action RPG with kind of above, almost like kind of not like Diablo, right? But that kind of above, like almost like Zelda. You know, you think back to like the original.
Yeah, it's
Zelda,
like it's real like time action. Too, right? I think.
Yeah, and it's real time. Yeah, it's real time. You know, has that kind of top down perspective. The cool thing about this, though, is the story is about as basic as every other Mana game that exists. You know, you've got the Mana tree and the Mana sword, and you know, it's pretty your basic RPG story. You know, if you've played any Mana game, you know it's all pretty much the same. But one of the cool things about this is that it's a dungeon crawler, so you're really you're really spending a lot of your time diving back into dungeons, trying to get better weapons, trying to build up your characters, and you have four different characters that you can play through. You've got Farrakh, Tambor, Poppin, and the Wanderer. Farrakh is kind of like your soldier. You know, he like his story is kind of like he lost his parents and his family in like this disaster. Tambor is a girl. You know, she's kind of like your bow or your archer. Poppin, he has the flail, and then you have the Wanderer, and he uses the hammer. And that's basically like the four kind of weapons you get. He's got like a big cat guy. And so you're basically just going back through dungeons and dungeons, trying to build up your characters, build up your weapons. You know, there are side quests involved. Have you ever played any of the Mana games,
so,
Adam?
Now, here's the thing, because when you revealed that this was going to be one of your games to me, I thought, oh, it's like, oh, this is the second game.
Oh no!
This is the sixth game. I was like, oh, yeah. I did not know there were that many Mana games to begin with. I thought there were only two. So I thought, oh, nope. I thought this was just like a port of the second game. And I realized,
no, and this one's really like it's like its own thing. But one of the cool things about it was you could play with four people. You know, the DS had that kind of local Wi-Fi thing,
right? Yeah.
And so you could kind of do that if you had a handful of people playing it. It looks really good. It's got those really crisp pixels. You know, that sprite art, soundtrack is great. You know, and basically it's kind of like, it reminds me of Dark Cloud in a bit. Like every dungeon floor you go to, you basically have to run around until you find in Dark Cloud you always have to go find the key to get to the next level, and that's kind of the same thing here. You're running around and you're looking for it's some kind of orb. I'm blanking on exactly what it's called right now, but you know, so dungeons are randomly generated. Every dungeon, it's you know, it's got a bunch of randomly generated, and you just go back and forth between each zone. Gleam drop is what it's called, and so that's what you need. And then once you get to the last floor, you fight a boss, and so I mean, it's really kind of a grindy game. If you're definitely like, I kind of like those grindy games where you're constantly grinding for gear, and that's, you know, that's definitely what you're doing here. The different weapon types are really cool because they have different effects on like the environment. Like the hammer can smash pots. You know, like your sword can cut down like grass in front of you and things like that. You also get little side characters. I think there's like eight. They're little elementals, and they, you know, do like kind of like buffs in a way, but you know, they give you like extra attacks, and they can change, like add elemental stuff to your weapons. They can kind of change your elemental attacks. And so then there's side quests where you basically go back to a previous dungeon and you basically fight like a harder, you know, version of that dungeon. But it's kind of like, the way I kind of view it is, it's kind of like, since, like, you know, there's really not another game that I can find on the DS that has that almost like, you know, I'm going to air quote here, Diablo style.
Right.
Right. Those dungeon crawlers where you could play with like four people and go about it that way. And so my brother and I both had it, and that's what we would do, is let's, you know, just grinding through some levels on Children of Mana.
Yeah, I saw the isometric view, and I saw like the way it played, and I was instantly like, "Oh yeah, I'm like this is looking pretty good." Because I loved Diablo 2 back in the day, and just I had so many great adventures with, like, you know, with other people, like other friends of mine, and it's just to have that on the DS where you could all just sit around together and just go into random dungeons and not know what's going to happen. That always makes for a good game experience, and it's like I said, it's got the great isometric view. It's got the cool, again, anime like sprites. You know, I'm just a sucker for that kind of stuff. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is like so it's a spinoff, so it's its own thing. There are a hand of Mana games though, you know, as you start here. So the original one is called Final Fantasy Adventure, right?
Ooh.
If you didn't know that, it's Final Fantasy Gaiden, I think it was later called in Europe. But then Secret of Mana is the second game. Then there is Trials of Mana, which just got added to the Secret of Mana, or the Mana collection that came out on Switch. Mm-hmm. And it's actually getting remade next year. They just last year did like a PS4 and Steam version remake of Secret of Mana. Then in the main series, the last one is Dawn of Mana, which is on PlayStation 2. And then there's the spin-off kind of games, which is Legend of Mana, that's on the PS1, Children of Mana, Heroes of Mana, which is also on the DS, and Rise of Mana. It's like a Japanese-only iOS game or something like that.
Yeah, I did not know there were that many. For this,
yeah,
I just
mm-hmm.
I always thought there were just two, and then I looked.
Well,
at
a lot of
it.
People don't. A lot of people don't know that Final Fantasy Adventure is a Mana game. It's basically the start of the mana series.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Like that game I knew.
It's on the Game Boy. Yeah, it's called Final Fantasy Adventure. So everyone's like, "Oh, it's a Final Fantasy game." Well, not really.
It's like it is and it isn't, and it's just
right.
But yeah,
and then in Europe, it came out and it was called Mystic Quest, which is even more confusing because then there's Final Fantasy Mystic Quest, you know. And
oh
so,
my God,
yeah, I know, which is its own thing, and I've talked about it before, so it's just infinitely more confusing. But Children of Mana, you know, it's kind of just cute, fun little game you can pop into your DS. I'm pretty sure you can still get it on Amazon for relatively cheap. A brand new version is like $40, but you can buy used versions for like $8. So,
oh, well, that's not bad.
No, it's not bad at all. And it's got pretty good reviews here. It's just it's that repetitive dungeon crawler kind of thing. But some people love that. We're just like, all right, hey, I just love grinding through.
Grinding through levels. I'm always in for the grind. You know, I've always kind of been on the lookout to expand my DS library, actually. So it's like I'm gonna have to look at all of these. And due to the fact that this is kind of its own game, that would make it a lot easier, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the DS and then, God, the 3DS, the libraries, you know, we just talked about 6 games today. That doesn't even scratch the surface of the stuff that's like, because, you know, you've got like the classics, right? You know, so like Super Mario 64 Remake, like, you know, that was one. You know, Mario Kart, the Zelda games, and then, you know, I think we hit kind of some of those second tier and even third tier games with like Special Forces Genesis. But man, it's even to just cover the DS would be a task in itself.
We'd probably be here for years.
Yeah, pretty much. So, all right. Well, hey, Adam, thanks for coming back on again. Guys, let us know. Shoot us some comments over on the Facebook page of maybe some games you guys want us to check out, take a look at. You know, maybe another system we could talk about. So, Adam, I think you're kind of taking a break from you're kind of moving on a little bit from that wrestling podcast. So, where can people find you on the internet now?
Yeah, right now, if you want to chat about wrestling, games, music, whatever, you could find me on the Twitter machine at King of Fuzz Style. Same on Instagram at King of Fuzz Style. I'm there. Yeah.
Perfect. And of course, that will change next week. So make sure you get those follows in now before it's.
I'll send out a memo if I'm gonna like change it again. Yeah, I'll make a mass post about it.
Perfect. Perfect. So, all right, guys. Well, you can find me anywhere on the internet at Super Gains Bros, as well as on, you know, various other podcasts such as Hyperspace Hangout, a Star Wars podcast, or Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. So, as always, thanks for listening.